This is an interview with Governor Victor Atiyeh at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is December 23rd, 1992, and this is tape 9, side 2.
Hey.
In the last session, we were talking about the 67 session, and I was asking you about your education committee assignment, and were there any issues or legislation that came out of the education committee that you're aware of that either you sponsored or that was significant in any way?
Not really, I can recall, except you recall we talked about the trainable mentally retarded.
Yes.
And that I really was responsible for holding that up, that 65 session. So we had a study and a report came back, and we did then come up with what I thought was a very fine solution to the trainable mentally retarded by waiting 2 years. And so that happened in 67. I can't recall what year, I don't know as if it was that year. During my period as a committee member on education, we had a numerous times we went through new basic school formulas, but I don't know if that was that session or later ones.
Hmm. Well, you were also on the taxation committee, and you were vice chair in that year. As vice chair, do you really have any role to play while the chairman is still there? It's only when he's gone, isn't it, right?
No. It's just a title,
mm-hmm.
And particularly if you're a minority member and you're vice chair, that's even more of a title. you know, if the chairman isn't there, you're chairman, and you can have the full responsibility of a chairman, but with only one exception, and again, I can't recall which year, the committee doesn't really do anything the chairman doesn't want done.
Mm-hmm. Well, there were a number of distinguished members of that committee, Harry Boivin and Vern Cook, Elfstrom, Husband, Natterlin, Potts, Raymond, and Uturi. You've talked about some of these people. I don't believe that you've mentioned anything about Elfstrom.
Only briefly.
Natterlin.
Bob was a senator from Salem, mm-hmm. Successful businessman, kind of a relatively quiet guy. Again, I can't recall what year, but he was a Republican leader of the Senate. This kind of a this steady person, nothing controversial, or he wouldn't get involved in anything controversial. Andy Netherland was a Democrat from Newport, or that area, Lincoln County, blind, and really functioned quite well. His wife was his secretary, and he. Again, he was. I think they call him Mr. 101. He was really provincial about the coast, and he was always doing what he could for Lincoln County and the coastal community, and pretty well known as that. Generally, both of them, Elson and Allen, were generally liked by the members. And I suppose that almost goes without saying that if you're not controversial, you're going to be liked. So. In other words, if you don't get anybody mad, they're all going to like you. So that's mm-hmm. pretty much where the two of them were.
How did Harry Boivin run committees? For instance, this tax committee.
Oh, he ran committees pretty well. Probably a classic style, and matter of fact, I remember very fondly 1 year in which I was the tax committee. Harry was chairman, and again, you see, I can't really remember years on what years all these things happened,
mm-hmm.
but that year there was it was Tony Uturi, Bob Elfstrom, I think it was Al Flagel and myself, and Harry Boivin chairman. So that was a 5-member committee, mm-hmm. and then Harry Boivin broke that down into two-man subcommittees, and I was with, I think it was Al Flagel, my subcommittee. So Harry kind of took things easy, and we went to work, and I loved that. I mean, the best, I've always heard the expression, the best committee, the 3-member committee, were or one's sick and the other's absent. You know, that's the best committee. Well, this came as close to it as you can come with five members. And we really, you know, you get things done in an awful hurry. Mm-hmm. And you don't have a lot of people asking a lot of questions and things going on interminably. You just kind of get at it and get your job done, and away we went. So I remember that. But when this was, obviously, was not the year. It must have been a session or two later that all happened. But Harry, you know, he's an interesting guy. This five-member committee, all are his friends. Now, understand that the names I mentioned are three Republicans and two Democrats, including Harry. But generally, his friends. And he tried to get one of his bills out of committee. And we just wouldn't get it out. Come on now, Harry. You know, this would be, it's one of these bills that Harry definitely had something up his sleeve. We didn't know what, but we knew it was something up his sleeve. And he chortled about it, kept getting it out, couldn't get it out. You know, we could just talk very frankly with Harry. But the fox was a good word for him. He was smiley, he was quiet, he was determined. He usually got his way.
Who do you consider to have been the best mind on taxes, aside from yourself?
Oh, aside from the present company. I think in all the years that I served House and Senate, I'd have to classify probably Clarence Barton in the House. Mm-hmm. And you recall we talked about his real affection for tax and interim tax committee and all that fight that we talked about mm-hmm. earlier. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That wasn't to say that most of the members, or a good number of the members, weren't familiar with taxes and taxation. Certainly we get to lawyers like Tony Aturi and Harry Boivin, and they knew the practical side of taxation and how it affected mm-hmm. their clients. But in terms of philosophy and the technicalities and a broad understanding of taxation, I think I'd have to go back to Clarence Barton. And but it's something that he just sort of grabbed onto and liked.
In that session, you had a couple measures that you sponsored. One was Senate Bill 398, which was about taxes measured by or imposed upon net income, and it was signed by the governor. Do you recall how that evolved in committee or on the floor?
Do you know any more about it than what you just told me?
I could check on it, but I don't have anything down here anything more.
I don't remember.
And there was also a Senate joint resolution which you sponsored for the Oregon. It would change the Oregon Constitution to make reference to U.S. tax laws, and that was tabled.
That one was one of my pets, along with flat tax, as we call it today, or net receipts. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea there was to use the federal taxable income as a basis for the Oregon tax rates.
I see. That's what we talked about earlier.
That eventually did take place, but never in its pure form. And now it's been out of shape again. But the whole idea was to simplify for the taxpayer. You go through all this mechanics once. Mm-hmm. There's a good side to that and a bad side to that. And the good side, of course, is it simplifies it for the taxpayer. The bad side is that if you really hew to that precisely, then you're going to say Congress is going to make the decision for us as to how we're going to tax. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to do that. So even when we finally passed it, we had some variations. Well, we're going to do that except for, and I'm sure now there's a lot of exceptions because God, these tax returns are incredible. But that's the idea behind that.
Were there other tax issues or tax legislation in the 67 session that you recall of?
There's always something.
Yeah, yeah. You were also on elections, and the chair of that was McKay?
Gordon McKay.
Gordon McKay?
Yeah, he's from Bend. Uh-huh. Well, only recently passed away. Real nice guy.
And again, a number of other interesting people on that committee. Was there anything in that session that you recall?
Nothing memorable.
And you were on Labor and Industry. You were on that with, you were chair of that.
Yeah.
Now that's interesting because that you were, this was when you were in the minority. And how did you get chair?
And Lent was vice chair, wasn't it?
And Lent was vice chair, that's right.
Yeah. Well.
And why didn't Lent get chair of that?
He did the next session.
And
I was vice chair.
So why did they put you in as chair in this session? Labor being such an important factor to Berkeley Lent.
Well, it's kind of hard to tell. It's not something I sought. As a matter of fact, eventually asked not to be on the Labor Committee anymore. And it is only because I think I mentioned once about really believing I was doing what I thought was right for labor. That doesn't always match up with what labor thought was right for labor. And so I was what called constantly a black hat. I do recall something that did take place during that session. There was a fellow, senator named Chapman. You find that name on that list?
Yes, on this committee.
Yeah. Well, he was what you call, I guess, the kindest thing, just a good old soldier. He was going to do what labor wanted done. You know, he just thumbs up or thumbs down, and that's the way the chappie would go. And I don't recall the bill, but I do recall that we had a vote on passing the bill out of the committee, and Chappie was the swing vote on that and voted yes, which surprised me, because I knew Chappie, and I knew what the bill was, and I knew that Labor didn't like it, and he was sort of half asleep or something. He really wasn't paying any attention. I knew that. So anyway, Bud Lent said to me, he said, well, he said, Chappie, I said, yeah, I can't understand why Chappie did that. And well, he said, let's have another vote. No, I know, it was a matter of keeping the bill in committee, not passing it out of committee, tabling the bill. And Chappie voted yes. And so now my memory takes me. It was the other way around. Labor wanted it. And so I said, okay, which I, of course, knew what was going to happen, because Chappie was going to vote right the second time. But I said, Bud, I'm going to fight you on the floor, and I just want to let you know that. So, because I knew Chappie made a mistake. I could have just said, to heck with you, the vote's the vote, and that's the end of it. But we didn't. And Chappie voted right, and I fought Bud on the floor, and we beat him on the floor. That incidentally happened later on with Betty Roberts out of the Education Committee. Similar circumstance. But in that case, it was just a matter of being fair to Chappie. And poor old Chappie, he made a mistake, and he was half asleep, so it was make it right. But, anyway, we took to the floor and beat him on the floor.
Well, there were a couple issues that you were, a couple pieces of legislation which you were the sole author of in that session. One was on unemployment, actually both of them were on unemployment insurance. One was signed by the government, the other one was tabled, SB 176 and Senate Bill 165.
I don't remember numbers.
Yeah, right. But it was unemployment a big issue that session?
No, 65 is when we played the unemployment compensation. That was the big session for the three-way comp bill, which passed. There was always bills in there to raise the we had certain amounts for paying a workers' comp and how it would be arrived at and how we would judge what pay the injured would get and how much by degree of lost limbs and death and all the rest of that sort of thing. There was always bills that related to increasing benefits and things of that kind. These could easily have been something like that, I don't know. Later on, I would tell you, later on meaning when I was governor, I made it very clear to labor that I wanted the workers' compensation reform. I wanted to reduce the cost of workers' comp. I was not opposed to increasing benefits, but they had to give me labor, something that would reduce the cost of workers' comp. And if they didn't do that, I was going to veto any of their bills if it came to me. Mm-hmm. And I made that very clear. I went to a luncheon, I recall, and made it very clear to all the labor leaders exactly what my position was. Well, I guess they didn't believe me, so they kept throwing things my way, and I kept vetoing them. Mm-hmm. Then they get mad about it. I said, what are you getting mad about? I told you months ago what I was going to do. I don't know how mad they really got. They just knew I was going to do it. Maybe they're trying to embarrass me. I don't get embarrassed that easy. But, you know, my whole view was I never figured that the injured worker was getting too much. It was just that who was getting it for how long. We had a lot of permanent total disabled that really shouldn't have been permanently totally disabled. We had a lot of people that were going, they'd have a determination. Then they'd go to appeal, and the odds were very good because 70-75% of the time they'd get more on appeal. And it was just, I mean, our workers' comp, we were just number one in the nation for cost of workers' comp. Mm. And it was hurting us economically. That's a good way, maybe a way of proving what I was feeling. My sense was, and I know because I was in business, that we were really not, this was an impediment for creation of jobs on two counts. One would be to attract new companies in. Mm-hmm. They'd compare the cost because it's a cost of doing business. Mm-hmm. Second was that as you hire more people, obviously you're gonna have to pay for more people. So you're very cautiously not hiring people or very slowly doing it. And that's why I'm saying that, you know, reduce the cost of workers' comp, that's good for labor. Mm-hmm. But they never saw that side of that argument, that it would be good for the people getting jobs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it could have been in that same vein, same idea, because they were, this is always coming up, almost every session.
There still seems like there's a lot of unresolved issues with workers' comp. Is that?
Yeah, there still is. And it's really shameful. The idea behind workers' comp initially was the way we designed it in Oregon, and I'm sure it's the same in other states, is that we're not going to really argue who was at fault. See, prior to that, it was always a contentious thing. Mm-hmm. There was an injured worker, well, it was your fault. And sometimes it'd go to civil litigation, and it was a messy thing. So the thing was designed, we're not going to argue about it. The worker's injured, and now we have a law, and you get so much for your injury. And there'd be no negligence issue brought up. Well, that was a pure thought of it. But it gradually got into being almost a kind of a welfare thing. You know, well, you know, they got the widows and they got children. And I said, wait a minute. This is not designed for a welfare program. If that's what you want. Let's go over to welfare and work on that one and be straight about it. And then it was just a matter of trying to get as much money as you can. Always. I can recall a story about Dr. Chouinard, and his, as you recall, his wife was in the legislature, but he was an orthopedic surgeon, and I had some work done when I was younger, and my wife had some work done, but he was talking one time about some injured worker on a back complaint, and he said to Dr. Chouinard, because Frenchie's telling me this, and the fellow says, well, how much disability will I have when you finish your operation? Dr. Chouinard said, none. Well, come on, how much will I have? He said, no, you won't have any. Oh, I certainly will have some. And then Frenchie, the light went on. He said, now look, if you want to have some disability after the operation, you better go see another doctor. And the guy went to see another doctor. Well, there's a lot of that stuff. There was always a lot of back injuries, lower back. And there was a lot of those because you can't really see that by an x-ray. You can't, you know, it's one of those mysterious things. My back hurts, and so you get paid for it. And then along comes stress. And I've said many times, oh, stress now is going to be the new lower back injury. And sure enough, it is. And it is today. There are people who will take advantage of it, and that adds to the cost.
How do you distinguish between legitimate claims for these things and cases that are not legitimate.
We haven't solved that. Uh-huh. You've got doctors that want to make some money. You've got lawyers that want to make money. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying all lawyers and all doctors. There's just some of them out mm-hmm. there. We've had fights with chiropractors whether they should be in or out. And
what was your view on that?
For a long time, the chiropractors were out. Mm-hmm. Like they are in now. And then you find some that are taking advantage of the whole situation. And mm-hmm. that messes it up for everybody else, which is always the case. And it's just continually difficult. And the plaintiff lawyers, labor lawyers, they just don't want to see anything done, and they're making money on this thing. I'm jumping ahead again, but I remember there was one bill they wanted to include the legal fees in the claim benefits. And I said, no way. Mm-hmm. While I was governor, I'm going to veto that sucker. I'm not going to ever let that happen. The injured worker has to figure out whether or not he wants to pursue it, because the lawyer gets a chunk of what this guy gets. But you're going to give this guy his injury claim plus the fee for the lawyer. I said, I'm not going to do anything like that. And well, they're always needling, always trying to chip away at it, always trying to, somehow they figure this free money. And they don't really realize that it was a high cost of workers' comp, along with a high cost of property taxes and a few other things, that really hindered the development, economic development of the state of Oregon. Mm. They never thought about that. But anyway, that argument continues.
Well, I'm sure we'll talk about it more as you're...
As we move along.
As we move along, right. You were on local government, it was husband. Was that Don Husband?
Yeah,
that was on. That was chair of that.
We talked about Don because you remember. Yeah. I told you he was a local government lawyer.
Right. And was there anything that came out of that committee that you can recall at this point that was?
Well, I can't take anything.
Boy, that's a lot of committees. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
That was too many.
How do you? Maybe we discussed this last time. I know we talked about it. I can't remember what was off or on tape, but. How do you get so many assignments? And if you have so many assignments, especially ones that seem like fairly major ones like taxation and education, how do you keep track of all that work?
Well, it was hard. And I after that session, it was like taking, 21 hours in college? It was too much. Mm-hmm. 18 is too much. Mm-hmm. It was too much. Just back off. We had the committee scheduled. Obviously, the speaker... knows what the schedules are, so he's not going to double you up. But it was just going from one to the other, and they meet at mm-hmm. different days at different hours, and plus the session and bills you had to deal with. It was just too much.
Being on so many committees, though, it's hard to imagine that some of them weren't doubled up occasionally. Did you have people that you relied upon, I know in Congress in Washington D.C. You know they've got that system of bells and whatnot for when votes are occurring and things
like
that.
We don't have anything like that.
You don't have anything like that.
No, we're not like Congress. No, I didn't. I just did it. Mm-hmm. Got to my committees, did my job. It was just hard and it was too much, and I just thought I don't want to do that ever again.
Yeah. There were a couple other bills that you sponsored, and we've talked about the one which was the trainable mentally retarded, which the government the governor signed at the time, and then there was another one, SB 311, which was at the request of the Division of Mental Health, and it was regarding motor vehicles used to transport persons for hire, and the governor signed that as well. Do you know what that would have been about?
Say that again.
It was at the request of the Division of Mental Health, and I'm not sure if it had anything to do with the retarded or not, but it was regarding motor vehicles used to transport persons for hire. That's what the journal said in reference to it. And the governor signed it.
Yeah, I can't can't remember the detail of that.
You know, how does the relationship develop between a division of government, say like mental health, and a particular legislator, in this case, they came to you, or did you go to them with an idea that they then somehow sponsored, or how does that relationship work?
It kind of works both ways. By that I mean there would be some thoughts that I would have on the subject, or the various agency of government know, you know, that you have some good and understanding feelings that mm-hmm. come to you. Mm-hmm. And so it does work both ways. Mm-hmm. It does work both ways. In terms of the committee assignments and the work that I had to do and working with agencies, you know, here again, it gets to a point of being self-serving, but I did my work. I worked hard at it. I had some personal feelings about people. As I'd mentioned way back at the beginning, when they inventoried my own record, it was a whole lot to do with human resources, and I never thought about it. I just did it because I thought it was that's the way I am, that's the way I felt, and I just went at it. That's probably some of the problem we're having right now, is that I never mentally inventory. Okay, now I've done this for those folks. I never. So it's hard for me to remember some of these things. I just did it, went on to the next one, whatever that next one might be. But I think my colleagues saw that I worked hard and I was conscientious. I wasn't horsing around. I felt pretty strong about the things I was dealing with, and the leadership felt I was dependable. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. you just have good rapport with people. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with them. They just have good rapport, and then you're honest, and I guess that's the way it all worked out.
Is there any way that a division of the government can, or an agency, can help a legislator with the legislation?
Oh, sure. You know, I could go and say I've got this idea. Mm-hmm. Very recently, to give you an example of how these things can happen, I bought a car this last July, and I have a special plate. It's X1. The plate comes due in January. Mm-hmm. So about a month and a half ago, I get this notice for a new plate. That's okay. I mean, you got to pay for it. Mm-hmm. But then I have to go to DEQ for my DEQ test. So I call the folks. I know some of them at the motor vehicles. And I say, you know, this just doesn't make any sense. This is a new car. He understood what I was saying. I said, there really ought to be some kind of a benchmark. If you have a car, then you haven't gone 10,000 miles or 12,000 miles or 8,000 miles or 50, you know, whatever.
Right.
And then that would be the benchmark. You don't have to go get the EQ. It didn't make any sense. The car had less than 4,000 miles on it. So he agreed, didn't you? It just doesn't make sense to go get a DEQ test. So now, in answering your question, I said, oh, okay, I'll call my legislator. He said, yeah, that's what I tell people to do. But I said, what I'm going to do is have him contact you to see what is a logical mm-hmm. logical benchmark. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. DEQ will know what it is, you know, when a car might start sending out the wrong emissions. So that's how, you know, I wouldn't be doing it. I called Senator Phillips up and said, hey, here's an idea if you want, mm-hmm. you know, it isn't life-threatening, but if you want something to do, this might be worthwhile, but call. And I gave him the name. Oh, yeah, he says, I know. And see if you can't work out as what makes a reasonable proposal. So that's in answer to your question. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Legislature says, I've got an idea, but how do we frame this in a reasonable mm-hmm. way? And if you know the agency and don't depend on them, you go see them.
What about the other way around? Does an agency that wants certain legislation passed, do they go to a representative or a senator that they think might be able to help them and see if they can
depends on the administration. And I have to tell you, and I keep bouncing to the governor, I know we're going to get to it, but we had a policy, and we knew that agencies wanted bills. But I wanted to know what those bills were. Mm-hmm. And that I would allow them to be introduced at the request of the agency. Or if they wanted to get a legislator the legislator was interested in it, it's better, obviously, if you get somebody within the body to sponsor the bill. And so Bill's,